I'm Frank Vaughn. It's November 8th, 2024, and I don't know about any of you, but I'm still having a hard time sleeping at night because my imagination wanders onto what is possible and what is coming and what has already transpired. What does it all mean for the next, not just 4 years, but 5 to 10 years, even longer, because the sea change we're living through right now is going to have lasting effect and will ripple down through time. But before I get into that, I want to discuss this article that was up on Western Standard. Mo breaks campaign promise to parents, retreats on biological sex change room policy. That would be terrible if it happened. And I'll be the first one to tell you that it would be terrible if it happened. But what about that parents' Bill of Rights? And what about the more comprehensive issue that surrounds this conversation on gender? Wouldn't you be happier if you waited for a more comprehensive bill that addressed this subject entirely? Something that we could actually talk about. So Premier Mo said, or had admitted, that he misspoke during the campaign when he made the policy a top priority, explaining he sometimes speaks before thinking and needs to take a breath. It's an interesting turn of phrase, but what it means is, in the moment, sometimes words come out that everybody takes as holy written law. So, skipping down, Mo's focus will be meeting with the lieutenant governor, forming a cabinet, and setting a legislative agenda. After the school board trustee elections on November 13th, Mo said the Ministry of Education would consult with the province's 27 school divisions on change room policy. There's going to be a conversation that happens with the school divisions after their elections happen, said Mo. That conversation is going to be focused on ensuring that every child is supported. I'm not really sure what the controversy is here. Was the idea that as soon as he swore in cabinet, he was going to advance a bill in the legislature that can't get passed by anybody? Like, what? Like, he's putting the government together. The election isn't even formally certified yet. I believe it's November 9th before the final count, the actual certifying count, happens. There's school board elections and municipal elections coming up on, I think early voting is open now. But that process isn't going to be done for several weeks. There's a whole slate of candidates for school board trustee that you can vote for. It's available on the internet. If anybody's interested, I can let you know where to find that in the comments. But the whole politics, the whole drive towards a resolution on this issue is going to be influenced by the outcome of those elections. It's actually a proper thing to do, to wait for the democratic process to completely play out, and by the end of the month and into December, start those consultations and perhaps have a policy on the table in time for spring. I don't know if that's actually going to happen. I don't know. Maybe he will back off on this, and that will suck, but this is just premature. I don't like – the right in Canada does this all the time. We're worse than cats. We take the smallest thing, the smallest change of detail, and we make these sweeping statements about what it means without just waiting for the story to come in, waiting for it to unfold and seeing what actually happens. I'm the first guy to get outraged when stupid things happen, but can we at least wait until the stupid thing has happened? Speaking of bad things, but in this case, bad things that may not now happen, it's amazing how the world held its breath awaiting the outcome of the U.S. elections. And once they allowed themselves to breathe again, what were the first words out of global leaders' mouths? Putin not only praised Trump for his bravery in the face of getting shot, he said he's eager for a phone call and to get back to the negotiating table. And if you actually care about the Ukrainian people, and you care about their lives, your number one priority should be getting a deal done to stop the killing, because they've lost an entire generation that they couldn't afford to lose. They're in the same demographic decline and crisis that every other Western nation is, irrespective of whether they're white or not. Japanese, South Koreans, Western civilization is literally fading away every day that goes by. And Ukraine is on the worst end of the spectrum, and they've just lost a generation of sons. Who's going to plow the fields? Who's going to harvest the crops? You want to get the killing done. This is a positive. Russia and China have indicated that they want to reestablish U.S. relations on a new footing. In a multipolar world, one must accept reality. There is no way for outside forces to remove the Communist Party of China. The United States does not have that kind of global dominance anymore. There is no way for the West, including the United States, North America, and Europe, to remove Putin's regime or remove the Russian army from the face of the earth. It is not feasible. The United States and NATO lack that kind of power. If they tried to do it, the world would be destroyed. NATO has not accepted a diminished role in global affairs. The United States has not yet accepted. Somehow, the American left has not yet accepted the decline of the global empire that they spent decades protesting against. They're actually at the moment, the cusp of change. The Trump administration signals that change. It's not about a reduction of American power. It's about a recognition that there are spheres of interest in this world that are not going away. And Western civilization lost the high ground a long time ago. Do people remember what happened under Obama? Do people fail to recognize that it is American interventionism all over the world that has led to the discord and disharmony we are all living through right now? The change that I talked a little bit about yesterday, that is coming, that is guaranteed in the United States this time around, will also come to American foreign policy and empire building. And it is still empire building. There is a role for the Western world, if we get our act together, to prosper more than any other ethnic, cultural, political interest on this planet. And I'm down with that. I want us to win. But we must first recognize and respect that the people who are decrying detente with Russia, the people who are decrying a readjustment of the relationship with China, it's okay to make sure that China is not exploiting your people, your land, and your resources. You can still live with them. You can still respect them. You can still do business with them. But the relationship is too lopsided and one-sided. They infiltrate us, and we give away too much. We can fix that in balance. It's okay and positive if Russia does business with Europe, does business with the United States, is actually welcomed into the world of Western nations. Because Russia is that historic hybrid nation that bridges Europe and Asia. Driving Russia and China and North Korea closer and closer together because we refuse to recognize their sphere of interest and influence is bad for all of us. The world has changed. The American unipolar moment is over. And anybody that's supporting that, they are willing to throw the world away to cling to a delusion. They're like somebody who thinks they can just declare their identity is different and they can violate biology. It's almost anthropological. It's almost inevitable that the world is always moving. If you're a student of history, you understand that nations change, spheres of influence change, empires come and go, but the ones that last, the civilizations that last, reconstitute, reorganize, and reemerge. And Western civilization is the civilization that has done that job the best in known world history. And we can still get back there. And the cool thing is, this time around is different. Trump had a lot of good ideas in 2016, and he had a lot of energy. The country was fed up at that time already, and they didn't want a Clinton. The Clintons are referred to. There's books out there called The Clinton Crime Family for a reason. These are fact-based, very criminal things that they actually did. No one wanted that. But he had no idea what he was doing, to be perfectly honest. It seems he walked into the presidency and had no idea how to run it, how to implement his reforms. And he got bogged down. And MAGA was opposed within the Republican Party and mercilessly opposed by the Democrats. And it was more opposed in the Supreme Court that had a finger on politics rather than just interpreting the law. A lot of things were different. 8 years, fast forward, things have changed. The neocons are done in the Republican Party. MAGA is where it's at. Non-interventionism is where it's at. Reorganizing the U.S. government and restoring it to, dare I say, profitability is a number one priority. Unleashing innovation again in the United States is very important. It's being held back by government. In a multipolar world, you got to compete. So you can't go on pretending you have control and authority, especially when you're confusing something as relevant as biology, as social policy. There's few other nations that are stupid enough to do this stuff. It's an indicator of how sick the American mind and the Western mind is becoming. North America has this disease acutely, but we now have an inoculant. We now have the people moving in a different direction. So this, all this is to say, I know I've been long-winded, do not underestimate what this change can look like in the next 4 years. This is different. Trump has the right people around him this time. There's still bad people. There's going to be bad people in his administration. But there will not be as much opposition this time. He has a loyal Senate. He has a fair Supreme Court. It looks like he's going to have the House. And he's going to have this this lady that he just appointed as his chief of staff. I did a lot of reading about her last night. She looks solid and good. Like she's capable of keeping the enemies at bay. She has familiarity with both worlds. She has one foot in one world, Trump's world, and a foot in the other world. With Elon Musk, with RFK, with Tulsi Gabbard, these are different kind of minds. They've proven themselves in the public eye. And with the power of the people, with the power of the Electoral College, the Senate, a fair court, the House, you're going to see things get done. And it's really important to the prospects of the world moving forward that we recognize the existence of China, that we recognize the existence of Russia, that we recognize the emergence of India. In a multipolar world, the game is played differently. And we can play that game really well because we have tons of resources. One of the interesting reads from a while ago, this was actually published back in October. It's been sitting open. But a groundbreaking study led by the U.S. Geological Survey revealed a potentially massive lithium reserve beneath southwestern Arkansas, which researchers say far exceeds the current worldwide demand. Just another feather in our cap if we can manage to gain control and keep control of the resources under our feet and develop them at the same time. The reorganization, the movement into a actual new American century, there was a policy document or policy documents that were written around the time that the 1990s turned into the oddies about the new American century and how to secure it. And it was mostly written by neocons and neoliberals. And they failed completely. They've wasted 20 years of time in this effort to maintain the global order that existed prior to the year 2000, the unipolar moment. It's passed us by. It's gone. But there can be a new global system. And before you say I'm a globalist, there's always a global system. Nations have to interact and live with each other. If you're an advocate for nationalism, if you're an advocate for a multipolar world, you have to accept that there's going to be a global order between those nation states. There will always have to be a conversation. People are talking about the United Nations agendas, 2030, 2050. all the different agreements that have been signed through the Western governments and ratified. First of all, they're non-binding. And second of all, read the room. Look around the world. The United Nations is in decline. Its moment's over with. It is a symptom. It is a leftover of the old world order, which is now passing us by. I call this show the fulcrum. And maybe it's because what I identify are key moments in time, the trends, the things that are going to shape our immediate future, our medium future, and our long-term future. We are on that fulcrum right now. There just isn't the strength of the uniparty left in the world. It's all going to change. So there will be a new global order. And the only question is what advantages is it going to offer to North American interests? What advantages it's going to offer to European interests? Which, by the way, North American interests and European interests don't necessarily align. So this Western civilization that we're in has individuated blocks too. And you can actually see this within Europe, where the European Union has a real unity problem between the various interests and ethnic groupings within their own borders. It's not just mass immigration. It's the juxtaposition of Eastern European interests versus Western European interests versus Great Britain's interests. Failure to recognize this inevitable change speaks to us in many forms, and this is one of them. Gavin Newsom vows to Trump-proof California's values. Republicans have blasted the governor's call to safeguard the state's liberal policies as a shameless political stunt. Let them have California. It's already pretty far gone. The people there are figuring it out, but they're voting with their feet. And it's a shame for those who are stuck there, the 40% or 38%. We're going to see, because they can't count votes there any better than they can in British Columbia, which is the other experiment that's still ongoing in Canada. Let them have one place. Let California be a shining example of the uniparty's waning power and their social policies. Let them have it. Have another 4 years while the rest of the country changes trajectory, because as I said in yesterday's video, the shift right should not be underestimated. 5% of votes move in New Jersey, in Illinois, in New York, in various other places, in Minnesota. All of a sudden, these are red states. I anticipate as we move forward in time that New York and Illinois are going to become swing states. If things are managed right in this administration moving forward, and that's an if, the red wave will not diminish. The tide will only continue to turn. And same goes here in Canada, which is why I say to Scott Moe, to Daniel Smith, to Pierre Poilievre, now is not the time to go soft. You found the groove. You're doing the right things. There's an anti-incumbent urge moving through the country. We have some worrying signs when it comes to how we conduct our elections with tabulators and everything else. Now's not the time to go soft. The whole culture, everything in North America is now shifting. Abandon the crazy, gender-bending nonsense. Get it out of the schools. Don't ever expect the teachers' unions to move in lockstep with common sense. Look, what's happening in Manitoba? Saskatchewan just dodged a bullet. Their new premier and their new government is now removing math requirements from public school. So the teacher's going to have more leeway to teach whatever they want in the classroom, which generally seems to revolve around social policy. There's a lack of an emphasis on the steak and potatoes of education and more of an emphasis on politicizing your children. Like, we dodged a bullet here. Don't go soft trying to regain those city votes, because they're not going to come to you because you didn't go to war with the teachers' union and some of their ideas. Those votes are going to come to you by delivering crime-free streets, dealing with the addiction problem, and furthermore, making concrete improvements in healthcare, however that manifests. If you do these things, you will grow your political base. It's a good idea for Daniel Smith and Scott Moe and all of these governments to remember the people who turned out for you, who turned out in big numbers, all live in the rural communities where we understand common sense far better than the often fantastical ideas that are promoted by politicians who are catering to the city. There's ways, there's common sense, there's people living in the city that we can get. We don't have to do it by catering to madness. Don't go soft now. It's time to follow through. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.